Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
Hey, friendo, Steve here.
And Lars.
And welcome back to Going in Raw, Dark Side of the Ring recap. And this week we've got Collision in Korea, the largest attended wrestling event perhaps in history, in recorded history, Larson.
Yes.
What did they say? It was like 198,000 or
200,000? 189,000.
189.
Two nights in a row.
Oh my gosh. Well, of course, it was forced attendance.
Yeah.
This was, I'll be honest, I was sitting there watching this. And like, obviously, you know, I need a little bit of historical context. I need a little bit of time. This might be my favorite episode of them all, going back all the seasons. It's balls out crazy. And there's so much going on. It made me, because, you know, Too Cold Scorpio was heavily featured in this episode. And his was one of the main subplots, him and Hawk's beef.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it made me think of the shoot interview compilation that talked about Sid and Arn mm-hmm. Scissor and incident.
Yeah.
And Scorpio is a great storyteller and unapologetic. And it made me just think, man, this episode is like three separate dark sides rolled into one.
You could do a whole episode on the Too Cold Scorpio and Hawk bit.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a whole episode right there.
Yeah, I thought it could function as a backdoor pilot for the Ricky Dozen episode.
Yeah,
because they do like a mini, you know, sort of a mini recap of Ricky Dozen, and you know he was Antonio Inoki's. We didn't really ask Evan much about this episode during our talk with him. But they got Antonio Inoki.
I know, that's pretty nuts.
I was pretty shocked. I was like, holy crap. Mm-hmm. That's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So
pretty impressive.
It was very impressive. This episode, it sort of was in the same, it sort of fell in the same, and I think these are ones I just really appreciate. I mean, I can really appreciate the family tragedy, but sometimes it's like a little too heavy for me, you know? It's like I can appreciate it, but I like to be entertained as well. And not that these are never entertaining, but this was endless entertainment. I mean, nobody died, you know, like it was just a crazy adventure. It reminded me of the Herb Abrams one, which was just balls out crazy. But yeah. Then Herb died. And this was kind of like that, but nobody died. It's just North Korea has been something that's always kind of fascinated me. And they really, I really appreciate that they brought the CNN correspondent into this.
Yeah. So I like that they really brought in the dynamic between North Korea and Japan and that going back, you know, decades.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And why there's tension there. They brought in the Ricky Dozen story, I think, not only because Inoki was his pupil, because Ricky Dozen was from North Korea.
Yeah.
And they in this episode, I think it was, shoot, who mentioned it? That the reason that Ricky Dozen was killed was because he was North Korean and tried to hide that.
Yeah. I think Inoki brought that up, didn't he? Or maybe it was just in the narration. It could have just been Jericho. I forget.
I don't recall.
But yeah, no, I thought I really thoroughly enjoyed this episode. I wish that there were more historical events that Darkseid could cover that involve Scott Norton. Because, and it's funny because even when our brief, very brief encounter with him at StarCast.
Yeah.
You know, dude, those guys who, it's funny how in the world of wrestling, certain guys age so well and other guys don't. And I do, and I, part of me thinks it has something to do with, you know, the amount of drugs that they took back then, mm-hmm. because that has long-term effects, you know, be it steroids or recreational. And I just suspect, given in what good shape both mentally and physically Scott Norton seems to be in, you know, he probably laid off back then. I don't know. That's just pure speculation on my part. He looks great and he sounds, he's a very good storyteller and he's a very, for being, you know, he talks about, you know, back then, nobody likes to be pushed around, especially wrestlers, you know? Mm-hmm. And when you've got these guards on your tail 24/7, and they're like, you know, blowing up at you for no reason. This dude wanted to pop off and he sort of thought better. But I loved how diplomatic he was with regards to the Too Cold Scorpio Hawk stuff. And, you know, saying, you know, Hawk was on all sorts of medication. I don't know what Scorp talks about, but if Hawk was fine, he'd have laid him out. But it's still, it's very like he doesn't want to have to address this. But he does. He's a really good storyteller.
He is. And, you know, we did have some limited interaction with him at StarCast, the second one in Vegas. His booth is like right behind ours.
Yeah.
Just came off as like the warmest dude. Literally, he walked by and just put his hand on my shoulder.
Yeah.
Just a little gentle squeeze, like just to say, how's it going? I hope you're having a good time.
Yeah.
You know,
now you're in the NWO, by the way.
Like, I guess that's, so.
You're in, man. You're for life.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, no, I thought it was a spectacular episode. It opens up, of course, with Eric Bischoff explaining his role in WCW and being approached by Antonio Inoki with an opportunity.
It's interesting that still, you know, at least in the context of how he's presented in this episode, so much of his perspective on this is still through the prism of, to a degree, the Monday Night Wars.
Vince is still in the background.
Yep.
It's always about Vince.
In the end of the day, a lot of this stuff is about Vince, because for Bischoff's perspective, it was all about we're still getting killed in the ratings. You know, we got Hogan and Macho Man. He kind of rekindles a relationship with New Japan. Mm-hmm, it hopes to improve WCW's worldwide presence, their reach. Mm-hmm. You know, so there's talent exchanges. You have Great Muta showing up on Nitro. And they're sending Sting and the Steiners over to Japan. There's that. And it's all, but that's all about because he can't compete with Vince at this juncture.
Yeah.
You know, it, comparatively to WWF, who is by far the largest national promotion, WCW, the way that it's presented in this episode, is they're still largely viewed, at least, as a regional thing, even though they do have national TV exposure. Because at this point in 90, no, Nitro wasn't until 96.
This was in 90. It was 90. It was set up in 94, and the event took place in 95.
Yeah.
But I mean, it you know, the narration, Jericho's narration indicates that WCW around that time was still viewed as a regional promotion. And it was, you know, once they got Hogan, things really did start to, you know, turn around in terms of the perception of the company.
Yeah, it did. It did. It did. It did a bit. So Bischoff reached out to Inoki,
but rekindle that relationship. To go back to your point really quick, even at the end of the episode, it's not as if Eric is satisfied with back then what happened. He says to this day, Vince hasn't topped that. It's still there.
He says, I think Vince was livid that there was a wrestling event larger than WrestleMania.
Yeah.
And then he kind of laughs and says, but none of them paid to be there.
Yeah, exactly.
So he at least includes that qualifier.
He does.
You know?
Yeah, he does.
But at the very end, he's like, you know, this is still the largest attended wrestling event in the world. So I did that.
I did that. Yeah, with a big grin on his face. And of course, there is, at his moment of triumph when he's talking about it, there's him on a motorcycle, Larson. He loves the motorcycle.
He's got such a serious
look on his face on the motorcycle.
The plains of Wyoming.
You're right.
So Yeah, we get a bit of a genesis of how Collision in Korea began or started. So Inoki asked Bischoff to be interested in bringing some wrestlers over to North Korea for a peace festival. And so at this time, Inoki was still running New Japan, but he's also in politics. Mm-hmm. Apparently, Inoki would make frequent trips over to North Korea. And then during one of them, he just brought the idea of having a wrestling show in the country.
He said offhandedly, too, like it wasn't
like part of the agenda or anything like that. So apparently North Korea wanted to bring in some huge names like Michael Jackson, mm-hmm. Muhammad Ali. Mm-hmm. And interesting enough, Inoki had Bischoff reach out to Ali.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they did mention here that Inoki did have a match against Ali in the 70s, I believe. I think it was 76.
Yeah, it didn't go well either. I'm kind of curious. No. I'm kind of curious, like, I mean, maybe it's out there. Maybe if you Google it, you can find it. But their relationship after that, because, you know, that match is known for being a bit on the contentious side. It's supposed to be basically Rocky versus Thunderlips. And, you know, it turned into Inoki sort of going after Muhammad Ali's legs. He was lying on his back.
Inoki was both the match and kicking at Ali's legs.
Yeah.
So as far as bringing WCW talent, Bischoff's asked about Hogan. And Bischoff says, 5-minute conversation. Yeah. He asked Hogan, it's like,
can't go there, brother.
Can't go there, brother.
I love, you know, hats off. Usually they get their reenactors look so much like, in this case, the Hogan reenactor looked like the human form of the rock and wrestling cartoon Hogan.
Yeah.
As opposed. Yeah. Because by that time, Hogan was kind of like sunken in a little bit. Like it wasn't, he wasn't as puffy as in the mid 80s. No. And this dude was like, the Michelin jacked. Man. He was jacked. Yeah, he had a big round head.
Huge.
Hit the out of focus a little bit more on this guy.
So Hogan's a no. Ali, once he was asked by Bischoff, apparently was into it.
Mm-hmm.
And then so Bischoff says, well, who is your plan B? Or asked, who is your plan B? And he goes, Ric Flair.
Ooh.
So apparently Ric Flair was into it, but at the same time kind of had his feelings hurt that he was Bischoff's second choice.
Which worked out, Ric Flair ended up working out probably much better than Hogan would have for reasons we'll talk about when we talk about the match.
Yeah. So Scott Norton tells us he was informed he was going to be on the show. Someone just came up to him and says, hey, you're going to be at a show in North Korea in a month or something like that.
Yeah.
And then apparently a lot of the Japanese wrestlers in the locker room were talking.
Mm-hmm.
And so he went to Masahiro Chono and asked, hey, what's the deal with this? And he warned him that it says that they want to kill us. So this I found interesting. So Bischoff was talking about cutting through the red tape of getting permission to go to North Korea.
This was insane. If it's true, this is crazy.
And so he says, you have to wait 6 months to get permission. So I didn't ask
the U.S. government, from the federal government. Yes. Cause you have to have permission.
Yeah. From the State Department to travel to North Korea. Cause there's still travel restrictions, or there was probably back then. And he goes, I just didn't bother asking. He said, maybe my boss knew I was going.
Dude, that's insane. That is nuts. That's absolutely crazy. Nuts. That is nuts. Yeah.
So this bit is interesting. So they all flew to Tokyo. And then from there, they got on a plane sent to Tokyo by the North Korean government.
A rickety plane.
To fly there. And it was a military craft, and Scott Norton described it as a piece of garbage made in the 1940s.
Yeah.
So it didn't have any of the amenities that you used to on a commercial aircraft, a military craft, you know? And so they said that they were in Japan, and there was, you know, media, and it was crazy. They go to North Korea, and there's nobody there.
Yeah. I love the way Scorpio described flying over, how he said on this, you know, you get up to South Korea, and you can see the cannons and the tanks lined up towards North Korea, and then you cross over to North Korea, and it's the same. North Korea is an absolutely fascinating. It is, you know, everything they do such a great job, especially the CNN correspondent did such a great job. You know, if you're not familiar with North Korea, it really is one place on this planet that is so detached from the rest of the world, but yet its own bizarre society. You know, when Scorpio also talked about it, Scorpio talking about turning on the TV when you're there is three channels. It's all government. It's all political stuff. And so it's not like, I don't know what kind of entertainment programming if any, they have over there. I don't know if stuff changed.
Scott Norton said later on, when the crowd finally came alive for the Inoki Flair match, he said it was like the first time they've ever been entertained.
Yeah. Yes. And that might be like not just, you know, hyperbole.
Yeah.
And so it did, you know, if you ever look at North Korea, even if you do, you know, God, I forget if it's there's available on like the internet. I don't know if it's on Google Maps because I'm not sure if I don't know. Well, I know there's no street view, obviously, for Google Maps, but like the satellite imagery, I think, has like all their buildings and stuff are just gray. There's no color or life to it. It's just gray.
Yeah.
And it's really shocking to see because one time, I don't know, it was late. I was down a rabbit hole and I was looking at this stuff. It's like, my God, it's just, it's really bizarre. It's really weird.
Yeah. I think I've seen that too.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
And so that's when former CNN correspondent Mike Chinoy, that he's interviewed for a bit, said how bizarre it was to have a wrestling show. And as you mentioned, a country that is so closed off from the rest of the world, and kind of this weird clash of cultures and whatnot.
And they have these big elaborate parades and events. Mm-hmm. And I think they're, from what I understand, the idea is it's propaganda to convince their own citizens that North Korea is the superpower on the planet. Like their people literally actually believe that North Korea is number one. And to do so, they'll put on these extravagant things, make everybody show up. So it's like, oh, this is proof that we're number one.
And Chinoy goes into a bit of tells a bit of the history of relations between Japan and North Korea. This is an interesting story from Eric Bischoff, where he says, so one morning I just wanted to I got up and wanted to go for a run.
Yeah.
And so he didn't tell anybody, didn't tell his handler, just got up, you know, and went for a run. He said he started running. It was dark out and there's no one on the streets.
And
nobody.
The great thing is the reenactor, they made sure to dress him in the most, like, I mean, honestly, early, not like 1991, 1992 looking
jogging
windbreaking, suit, yeah. You know, windbreaker jogging suit. It's like it's like Hogan colors, like red with like a yellow voltish stripe through it. Yeah. So it's like most shockingly American thing you could wear.
Yeah. And all the extras in the reenactment are just wearing drab.
It's all drab. Yeah.
Clothes. So he says he's running. And as the sun's coming up, people start coming out to the streets. And he says that happens. They see him. And they part.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, and everybody's got the look of absolute terror on their face.
Yeah.
And it seemed like for him, that's really like the first time he's like, okay, things are different.
And he brings up that there's like a line of school children as well. And that's what really shook him. He was like, you know, it's one thing to see looks of terror on people, but on children, it's like extra messed up. And they all look like, yeah, I mean, imagine you've been told that Americans are pure evil. And it's like, you know, you try to get into your head, okay, what would the equivalent of that be? And you just think of like, I don't know, like a Leatherface from Texas Chainsaw running down the street with like a bloody chainsaw, you know, like it's something that would be just weird. But like, I'm trying to think of something equivalent, you know, to like how we would react to something. And it's difficult to, because we haven't been conditioned for the most part, you know.
Yeah. And so then we get to the subplot of Too Cold Scorpio and Hawk having beef with each other. Too Cold Scorpio says it all kind of predates the North Korean trip. He had had heat with Ric Flair during something that happened like six, seven, eight years.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he said he let it build up. And so he's still holding a grudge.
He believed that Flair had him fired from WCW.
For something that Too Cold Scorpio had done or something. Or Flair had perceived that Too Cold Scorpio had done. So during the beginning part of this trip in North Korea, Hawk was riding with Ric Flair. And then just one day he decided to get on the bus with everybody else. And so Flair comes out and he's like, looks like he's looking for somebody. And Hawk says, oh, I wonder if he's looking for me. Should I get off the bus and ride with him? And Scorpio shouts, F that pussy. Let him ride by himself.
And Hawk was like, what did you say? He said, what part didn't you understand? The part where I said, F that guy, let him ride by himself, or when I called him a pussy? And then they got into this nasty fight.
Where apparently Too Cold Scorpio almost popped out Hawk's eye.
Yeah, he said, I had my finger in his eye and it was like halfway out. And then like the Japanese guys pulled me off and they got enough, you know, a distance between us. And then he like gave him another kick. And that's when Norton said, you know, Hawk was on some, he wasn't in a good way and he was on some meds that mm-hmm. really like gave him flu-like symptoms. Mm-hmm. But if he wasn't on those meds, it would have been a different story, according to Scott Norton. But yeah, do you believe for one second that Bischoff hadn't heard of that incident? Not a chance. Not a chance.
He was probably on that bus too.
He was probably on the bus. And if he wasn't, I guarantee somebody said, hey, Scorpio almost, you know, popped out Hawk's eye, you know, like
there's more to the story though.
Yeah, it got worse. Yeah.
It goes way further. So Scott Norton tells about he's there for a couple of days. He finally gets to talk to his wife on the phone, and she's mad at him. She thinks that he's just out there partying, hanging out with the other wrestlers, and not calling home. And he's like, "No, no, no! You don't understand what's going on here. I can't get to the phone." He says, "You don't understand." To quote him, "The shithole country I'm in."
And then the phone clicks.
Clicks, and he thinks that she hung up on him. But soon enough, there's people knocking on his door. It's some soldiers. They escort him out of his room, take him someplace else, and he doesn't know where he's at. No one knows where he's at that point, he says. And this government official comes in and tells Norton he can't say anything wrong about North Korea. You're essentially banned from making phone calls. And Norton was under the impression that this was serious, like serious yeah. business, yeah. as in he might not walk out of that room.
They'll put a bullet in his head, yeah.
Yeah, and so he's like, all right, I just want to get out of here. Sorry, he apologized, and they let him go.
Yeah, yeah, that was absolutely nuts. That was after he also told a story about going down to play pool, because I think that was like sort of the culmination of, you know, him being frustrated there, because mm-hmm. you know they're in their hotel room, nothing to watch, nothing to do. So him, Benoit, and
well, they got soldiers outside their all day,
and they go downstairs, and he was like, I was shocked there was a pool table down there. And he said it took 2 hours for the receptionist to get us the pool balls, the balls for the pool table. He said they had to run it through by the government to get us the pool balls, and so they got them, and he's going for a shot, and the cue ball goes flying off the table, as happens sometimes. Mm-hmm. And it hits the marble floor and it starts bouncing, and they get all pissed at that. And they take the balls away and they start smashing the balls. And he was going to throw down with one of them. And I forget who. I think maybe it was Hawk. Maybe it was Benoit. I forget.
It might've been Chono.
Oh, was it? Okay. He was like, hey, don't do that. You don't want to do that here. And then I think it was, yeah. And then so there's the Norton bit. And we get back to the unsettled beef between Scorpio and Hawk. Now, did Scorpio's apology come first? Like he tried to break bread and Hawk took a swing at him.
Yeah.
And
so then they're at some ceremonial event at a temple. And this is when they tell the story of Muhammad Ali just like taking his jacket off, rolling up his sleeves and shadow boxing.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
You know, so they leave the temple, and that's when, as you mentioned, Too Cold Scorpio kind of extends an olive branch to Hawk, and Hawk just turns around and decks him. And then so Scorpio goes after him, tells Hawk he's going to kill him, but that's broken up. So later on, they have a state dinner. And Too Cold Scorpio had hatched this kind of plot where they had stainless steel chopsticks for that dinner. So he dropped one, put it in his suit and asked for another. And so he left the dinner with a couple of stainless steel chopsticks. He goes back to his hotel room, which he's sharing with Chris Benoit, and he opens a window, and the windowsill is made of concrete. So he's there sharpening the ends of this chopstick to make a shiv.
He's like, I know how to make a shiv.
Yeah.
My dad, and
Benoit's like, hey,
I think I don't know how to make a shiv.
And Benoit's like, don't do it. If you kill Hawk here, you're going to be in North Korea for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
So more on that in a bit. So it's like the day of the show. Norton and Flair are riding there together. And Norton says there's two lanes, I assume on the road, of people just walking to the show.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, oh my gosh, this is a huge crowd. And their driver says, yeah, everybody's forced to be here.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Bischoff, he hears about the crowd, thinks Inoki is a genius. They're leaving WrestleMania in the dust.
Oh, man, that's good.
And so then it's the experience of putting on these matches for this crowd that has no idea what they're watching.
Mm-hmm.
None.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just silence. There's some great editing here with some shots of people looking kind of confused,
eating
people
food.
Yawning.
Yeah, yawning. Yeah. Doing
food.
Everything but being interested in this.
Yeah. And Norton's talking about how quiet it was. He says at one point, Hawk got up on the turnbuckle and started cussing at the crowd, asking them why they were here, why they were there.
Yeah.
I guess it wasn't until Ric Flair and Antonio Inoki had their match, the main event, that the crowd got into it.
Mm-hmm.
I guess in North Korea, they are aware of Inoki's connection to Ricky Dozen, they made it sound like Ricky Dozen was a bit of a folk hero.
Yeah. And Norton also described sort of the psychology of the match was maybe different than what the other wrestlers had been doing. He says they went old school and sort of just used a lot of strikes and made it look a bit more like an actual fight. And of course, you know, that's where Ric Flair being there comes into effect because, you know, he was just selling like crazy for Inoki. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and then you actually see, you know, the crowd start to come alive. And Norton had it so eloquently in his own way. He was like, these people who had never seen pro wrestling, who had never been entertained, didn't know how to process this. Even they understood this main event match and they were going wild for it. And he said, that's why it's the greatest wrestling match of all time. Especially because of the circumstance, which is a fascinating point of view.
Mm-hmm. It really is. It really is. So let's get back to the Too Cold Scorpio Hawk saga. So there's a ceremonial dinner they have after the shows. It's like the last thing they got to do before they get to leave.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're leaving their hotel rooms. And so Too Cold Scorpio finds himself face to face with Hawk.
Yeah.
And he's like, all right, how do you want to do it? You want to finish this? What do you want to do? And he says, Hawk is saying nothing. He's getting the elevator. And Scorpio says he kind of backs in. So he keeps his, you know, eyes on Hawk the whole time. And then Hawk tells Too Cold Scorpio, I ran out of pills. I ran out of roids. I ran out of smoke. I got nothing. I let my nerves get to me. I got upset. He apologizes. Scorpio says, all right, I accept your apology, but you still want to finish this. When we get to Tokyo, let me know and we'll finish this.
He's like, I got this shiv ready to go. I wonder if he was able to smuggle the shiv onto the plane going back to Japan.
Yeah, I don't know. One thing we didn't mention at the beginning is when they showed up in North Korea, they apparently, like, the customs room they went through, mm-hmm. Scott Norton said it was just covered with dust because no one had been there.
Yeah.
And they confiscated, like, all their technology,
their
passports.
Which really freaked them out.
Yeah, because Norton says, as a wrestler, you don't go anywhere without your passport, you know?
Yeah.
And Bischoff was talking about how they were there for 4 days. Everyone was worn out, exhausted. Tensions were running high. And it says once they got their passports back and got on the plane back to Japan, it's like everybody's kind of relieved.
You have Flair, like, in his, you know, $5,000 suit and his alligator shoes, got down on hands and knees and kissed the tarmac. Which is, quite a sight to see. And speaking of Flair, you know, I assume he's under a WWE Legends contract of some sort, so he probably couldn't be interviewed for this.
Yeah.
But it's funny because I do feel like the interviews they got, I mean, Bischoff, you kind of never know because, you know, Bischoff will craft a narrative. I think that's been sort of determined at this point. But you know, Norton, I thought was great. Straight shooter. Scorpio, straight shooter. Seems like he's really, you know, playing it straight. Inoki, you have no reason to believe that guy's going to lie about any of the stuff that he was talking about. And so I feel like we didn't probably get any embellishments. And I feel like if they had gotten two people that have really, I would have really been curious to get their point of view. Scott Steiner, because he was there, and Ric Flair. Mm-hmm. And Flair is probably impossible to interview at this point because he's with WWE.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm curious if they even tried with Steiner.
I mean, they got Stone Cold in the debut episode. I don't know what Stone Cold, if he's under any sort of WWE contract or not.
I mean, no, you never know. You never know how they can get people. You just sort of assume maybe they reached out. I mean, Flair, you would have thought they would have reached out to him at the very least.
You know, you assume anybody connected with WWE, you know, strongly connected WWE would be probably a hard get in terms of interviews.
I would think so, yeah. I wonder if they even approached any of either of the Steiner brothers.
Who knows?
But, who knows? Because, yeah, Scott Steiner, that would have been... I mean, God, have we ever pitched to those guys a Scott Steiner episode? Just him?
Wow.
I mean, I don't know really what the hook would be. It's just,
yeah, I don't know.
He's Scott Steiner.
He's just Scott Steiner.
Can we do a dark sign on Steiner math?
There we go. Just say everything about that promo.
It's not real math.
So whatever goals Antonio Inoki had from a political standpoint with this trip apparently blew up in his face because his bid for re-election failed. Apparently he was out of politics for a while. Mm-hmm. They just wrap it up with Bischoff talking about how he thinks Vince was livid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That the show outdid anything WrestleMania never did.
Yeah.
And then he said, I did that.
Freaking Bischoff. I like his intro too. He says, yeah, I spent a couple minutes in the wrestling business and ever since then I've made money looking back on it. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Bischoff is hilarious in his own way. But I thoroughly enjoyed this episode. It was such a roller coaster and that wonderful subplot. And it's funny, I love how you can hear, I don't know if it's Jason or Evan or somebody else in the background when they're first asking about the incident. So tell us about, have you heard of Scorpio and Hawk and how Too Cold Scorpio almost murdered Hawk? And they're like, hadn't heard about that. Not until now. Yeah, get out of here.
Get out of here.
That was great though. But what an unexpected subplot.
Yeah, I was not expecting that. I mean, I was just kind of expecting some of the madness of being in North Korea. Some of this, you know, even some of that, like the pool table bit, like, like they get upset that the cue ball got flown off the table.
Nuts. I couldn't imagine everybody being on edge. I mean, when Bischoff talked about his handler being livid and him being really concerned that because he slipped through her hands, she might be taken away and shot, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the kind of place we're talking about here. It's absolutely nuts. Like it literally made me want to go and be like, okay man, let me go read up some more on North Korea, because it is it is fascinating. It's like a giant fucked up social experiment, you know? So what do we have next week? Do we know?
They said it was Ultimate Warrior.
Oh, that's right. Ooh, wow. Okay. Well, that'll be an interesting one.
Yes.
All right. Well, thanks everybody for tuning in. We appreciate it. Of course, last week we did the Nick Gage episode. So that's available. And the Brian Pillman episode. That's available too. So you can check those out. And we'll be back with Warrior next week. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We appreciate it. Until next time, we'll talk to you later.
Goodbye.